scripture this morning comes from the Gospel of John, chapter 11, verses 17 through 44. That isn't the entire story. It actually begins verse 1, but to spare you some of that, we'll catch you up on that. But in John 11, verse 17, we begin. On his arrival, that means arrival to Bethany, on his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now, Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in their loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died, but I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha answered, "I know he'll rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though he dies. Whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this?" And she replied, "Yes, Lord. I believe that you're the Messiah, the Son of God who is to come into the world." After she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. "The teacher is here," she said, "and he's asking for you." When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. And Jesus hadn't yet come into the village, but it was still at the place where Martha had met him. The Jews who had been with Mary in the house comforting her noticed how quickly she got up and went out. They followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. And he asked, "Where have you laid him?" "Come and see, Lord." And Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. "Take away the stone," he said. "But Lord," said Martha, the sister of the dead man, "by this time there's a bad odor, for he's been there 4 days." Then Jesus said, "Did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me." When Jesus had said this, he called out in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, "Take off the grave clothes and let him go." For the past week, I've been thinking about stones. I'm odd, I know. But then those who've been around a while know that too. I'm thinking about stones, all kinds of stones. And there are stones that come in every shape and size, from pea gravel to boulders bigger than houses. There are stones that can be helpful, useful in building bridges, or they can cause problems, such as being even deadly weapons. Just ask Goliath. There's foundation stones and cornerstones that help us to build buildings. There are paving stones that help us to create uniform pathways and streets. There are stones that are worn smooth from the millennia of water being rushed across them in the river. And there are sharp and jagged stones like slate and flint. There are lodestones of iron and copper and nickel, even silver and gold, and there are worthless stones like pyrite called fool's gold. Almost universally, stones are hard, unyielding, impervious to all but the most violent stresses and attacks. Our story today is about stones, or one particular stone, a gravestone for a man named Lazarus. You've heard the story from the time Jesus returns to Bethany, but the part you haven't heard this morning, at least, is that Jesus was ministering there in Jerusalem and Bethany, just in this one area of Judea, and his following was growing. He was becoming very popular, so much so that the scribes and the Pharisees and the chief priests were concerned that he was getting so popular it might upset the status quo. They began to increase the pressure on Jesus politically, and so he decided he would leave the area for a while just to get away from the heat, let things calm down a little bit. And so he left Bethany and went off into a part of Galilee. Now, while he was gone, Lazarus, who was a friend of Jesus, we see that clearly here, Lazarus got sick. Now, I don't mean your typical man cold, where the man is in bed and says he's dying, but he's not. I mean really sick. Sick as to sick, he may be going to die. Martha and Mary, Lazarus' sisters, they all lived together. They all were a part of the same relationship with Jesus, and they knew what Jesus could do. They had listened to Jesus preach. They had followed his teachings. They had supported his ministry financially, and they had opened their homes. Their home was for Jesus, his home, when he was in Judea, in this area, where he could go and let his hair down, if you will, get away from the pressure and the limelight. They shared that kind of life and love together. And Lazarus then had gotten very sick while Jesus was gone to get away from the political heat, and so much so that the sisters were afraid he was going to die. They sent word to Jesus, urgent word, that he needed to come home and come home now because his friend Lazarus wasn't going to make it if he didn't. And what did he do? He stayed where he was. For 2 more days, he stayed where he was. The disciples were okay with that because it kept them away from the heat of the Pharisees and the chief priests. And then finally, after 2 days, Jesus more or less just got up from where he was, what they were doing, and picked his few things up and started to leave. And he said, "Where are you going?" "I'm going to go back to be with Lazarus." I can't imagine their frustration, saying, "It's only been a few days since we left there because of all the heat, because of all the pressure, because of all the risk. If you go back there, they're going to stone you, and unspoken, and us with you." And he said, "Well, Lazarus is sleeping. I need to go be there for him." Well, if Lazarus is sleeping, that's a good thing. Sleep is restorative, and soon he'll be strong. And then he looked at them like he must have at certain times. He says, "No, hear me, he's not sleeping. Lazarus is dead." And then he says, "It's a good thing for you that I wasn't there, because then I will show you something new." With that, he turned and walked away. I can almost imagine the disciples still sitting there looking at each other, saying, "How can we protect him if he won't stay out of trouble?" It was finally Thomas, the one we give so much guff about being doubting Thomas, who said, "Let us go and die with him." And they all got up and they followed. And that's where we come to the story that we heard this morning. And when we see Jesus interact with Martha and with Mary, we learn several things about their relationship. Truly, they were close. And being close in relationship, they had expectations. I mean, can you think of people with whom you have a really close relationship and the expectations you have of each other? "I expect you to act a certain way with me. I expect you to hold certain confidences. I expect you to be there for me when I need you, just as surely I will be there for you when you need me. I expect those things because we share this life and love together." Well, Jesus didn't operate that way. They expected him, and I think within their rights and relationship, they expected him to come home, and he didn't. So when he meets Martha and Mary, first Martha, and she sees him, the first thing she does is to begin to, if not literally, at least with her words, put her finger into his face and says, "Where have you been? Where were you when we needed you? When Lazarus was so sick, you could have kept him from dying." But that part's gone. It's too late. Now, however, she did, to her credit, she said, "But I believe even now, whatever you ask of God, he'll do for you." And then Jesus said to her, "Martha, your brother will rise again." Now, she heard that as a platitude. You know, the things you say at funeral homes or when you're visiting somebody who's lost somebody. Hers a platitude, and she gave him in return what we would call the Sunday school answer. "I know he'll rise again at the resurrection of the last day." She says, "No, Mary, listen to me. Your brother will rise again." He says, "Mary, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me and dies will live. He who lives believing in me will never die." He says, "Martha, do you believe that?" She said, "Yes, Lord. I believe you're the Messiah who's to come into the world." I love the way he challenged her in the midst of her grief and her pain. Not unduly, and not to be mean-spirited, but he challenged her to help her move past that fog to see what it is he had to work with her. She leaves, Mary comes back, and the same conversation takes place. At least it's even word for word in the scripture, whether it was actually written down that way or spoken that way. "Where were you when we needed you?" That's my take on it. "If you'd been here, my brother would not have died." We know that they weep, he weeps, they go to the grave, and he tells Martha to roll away the stone. And Martha says, "No. I can't roll away the stone. It's been there 4 days. He stinks. His body is decaying." Jesus then said, "Didn't I say to you, if you believe, I will show you the glory of God?" And so she gives him permission. The stone is rolled away. He prays before God and the people, and then he calls Lazarus to come out, and he does. It's an amazing story. It's an amazing story that has so much in it that I don't know where to begin. I'm not sure. We've talked about their deep love. We've seen the context of this story, the story in the context of their relationship. But here are some important things beyond just the frame of the story. Jesus meets the women at the point of their need. Both literally, he came to them in Bethany, but more than that, at the point of their need. He came to them in their struggle, in their suffering. He engaged them in their pain. And there was no pretense of social constraint. They didn't wait to fix their hair and wipe away the tears and put on makeup to look right in his presence. They came raw. "Where were you when we needed you?" And he engaged them at that point. Throughout all the world religions, only the God of the Bible, the God of Christianity, engages with his creation. All the other world religions have their gods who will allow and wait for their adherents to learn and come to full self-actualization so they might somehow join their God at their God's level and become part and one with the universe. Our God comes to us. He sent his son Jesus, sent him to us to reveal himself and to meet us where we were, where we are. And he climbs down into the pit with us and enters our pain and lifts us out, healing our brokenness and frees us to live with him forever. Our God chooses to get dirty And he climbs down into the mud of our messy lives that we might not have to struggle there alone. And we see that as Jesus comes to them in their need. Jesus didn't act just for Mary and Martha, but also for everybody else to know that God has sent him. That was the point of his prayer out loud. Father, I know you always hear me, but I thank you so that these people here will hear my prayer and know that you have sent me. He did it to reveal himself to all the people who were there, that he was one who was more than able to heal sickness, but it has the power over death. But there's another important element I think that is easy to miss, and I think it's really important, and maybe it's just me and I'm going off on one of my tangents like I do think about rocks and things. And it's this. When they got to the cemetery, Jesus needed Martha to give him permission. He needed Martha to roll away the stone. And if she hadn't done that day, nothing would have happened. I believe that's true. Martha rolled away the stone. He needed her to do that, I suggest to you, because he couldn't do it himself. I mean, he was Jesus. Why couldn't he do it himself? Because it wasn't his stone. And God doesn't force himself upon us. With Lazarus dead, Martha is now the head of the household, the older sister. So that means she's responsible for everything of their property. She is responsible to take care of her sister Mary. So it's her family, her loss, and her stone. I believe very specifically Jesus had to ask Martha to roll away the stone. But her decision couldn't have been easy. I mean, think about it with our expectations of what we know about what life's supposed to be like. I mean, the logic of physical reality told her that after 4 days, her brother's body had begun to decay. And as she said, "He stinks, Lord." Her religion told her that after 4 days, a person's soul no longer hovers near the body and has gone into the bosom of Abraham, so any kind of attempt at resurrection would be impossible. And her emotions told her that if she tore the stone away from the tomb, she might be tearing open her wounds that had just begun to heal. The wounds of the loss of her brother. The wounds of a failure of a friend. What if it didn't work? I can't go through that pain again. What would you have done? Yet her faith said yes. She gave the order and the stone was rolled away. And then Jesus called Lazarus out and he was set free to live once more. One of the beauties of the stories of the Bible is not just that they are exciting and meaningful to us and what God did to prove himself to the people in those days. It's that they are still continue to be relevant in our lives. They've not lost anything in terms of their meaning for our experience. We know, you see, we know other kinds of stones that would fit into this kind of conversation. Some years ago, Joyce and I met with a beautiful young couple that we had known all their lives. I had married them, and we'd been close all the way through. And they were loving, but they were struggling with each other. He was very tender-hearted, but wasn't a big talker in the best of times. And he couldn't communicate at all under deep stress. She could talk circles around him any day of the week, and when things were stressed, she really went into hyperdrive. Trouble is, she had learned growing up, being modeling by her parents, what it was like for communication in a relationship, and that was to be those who were manipulative and to give personal attacks, you know, watching for that exposed spot and just poking where it was. And so she had learned that model, and she had brought it into their marriage, and him being so very tender, she just was killing him inch by inch, to the point that he could not, in his own mind, do that anymore. When she was attacking now, he just shut down entirely. He wouldn't speak, which only meant that she needed to step up her efforts. But she called me. And Joyce and I traveled a two-hour journey to get there in their home. And when we arrived, he was sat stone-faced on the couch, just barely acknowledging us, but looking out the window. And he said he couldn't do this anymore. That it was killing him and had to stop. He had to stop in relationship. And I could almost see in his eyes stone being rolled across the entrance of the tomb, locking himself inside, where it was safe. But as we talked, eventually there was a softening of his resolve, and I asked for 3 days. 3 days that they would consider, decide if they would work at it and go to see a counselor. She said yes, he wouldn't commit. We prayed and we wept and we hugged and we kissed and we left with no resolution. In the car on the way home, Joyce says, well, what do you think? And I said, I don't know. It's up to them, but really up to him to take that risk of being hurt again. 24 hours later, he called me. Still made no promises, but said, kind of like, maybe. They were going to go away for the weekend, and when they came back, they were going to look for a counselor and see what happened. And as he spoke, I could almost hear the scraping of a stone being rolled away from the entrance of a tomb. I didn't know at that point where it would end, but that's where it had to begin. It's been 15 years since that day, and I'm pleased to say they are still happily married to each other. I've heard folks say, I'm happily married to different people now. And they've learned how to honor and cherish and build each other up. And there are other stones in our world today, stones that cover up pain that we've experienced, that we place in front of those places we stuff that garbage down in our life. You have your stones, and I have mine. Martha's stone that day, and our stones, yours and mine, are heavy and hard to move. We put them there to bury or hide our broken places within us so nobody can see. We even hide them from ourselves, and we would hide them from God if only we could. But in burying them, we're still keeping them with us. If I bury some of my garbage but to think I'm leaving it behind, everywhere I go and everything I do, that hole comes with me. Covered over, but is there nonetheless. And our brokenness begins to fester and decay. And the stench is the smell of hope decaying. And this is where our stories and the story of Mary and Martha really come together. Into the hopelessness of our impossibilities, God comes to meet us where we are. He weeps with us in our pain. He tells us who he is and who he wants to be for us. As he said, Martha, I am the resurrection. He says it to you and to me. He goes with us to the site of our buried pain and says, show me where it hurts. He challenges us, roll away the stone. He asks our permission, you see, he must, because it's not his stone, it's ours. But if we will give God permission, if we can even just say, see, crack it open, no promises, but maybe, he goes to work and he opens it up and he unseals the tomb of our impossibilities and failures and pain. Then he will look into the black mouth of that corruption and call new life to come out. Everybody has a stone. Even Jesus had a stone. It was rolled away that morning at pre-dawn hours on that Easter morning when he rose from the dead to conquer death for you and me. In his resurrection power, he asks permission to roll away our stones. And so I take this whole conversation to get here to the end, to ask very directive, in a very direct way, are there things you've buried in your life that are still lying there dormant, or so we think, in the dark? Pain, failure, shame, anger, grudges, bitterness festering. Things you can't seem to overcome, so you bury them. Maybe a lifetime ago, or maybe your wounds are fresher than that. Jesus meets you here, where you are. He comes to you at your point of need. And he weeps with you as you weep. He challenges you in your pain. I'm here with you. I understand the pain, but I'm more than the pain. Do you believe that? And if we say yes, and give him permission, he rolls away the stone and sets us free. So as you leave this morning, as you spend time this week in thought about him in your life, somewhere, sometime, if not now, I pray you'll say, Lord, roll away the stone. I'm ready to be set free. Amen.